October 26th, 2022, 1621 hours, Ward Green here. I'd like to try to explain the foot powder. First of all, I got a notice today from FedEx that they tried to deliver my boots, and I missed it because I was just, they didn't say why. I'm saying I was in bed. And they came at apparently 10 o'clock or close to 10, but I was in bed at 8 o'clock. So I probably was asleep or possibly asleep at the time. I don't know why I didn't hear them. But I guess they don't come twice on the same day, so they're going to try again tomorrow, possibly, because that's what it says here. They're going to try again. And they normally do it on consecutive business days. So I better be awake tomorrow because I want to get those boots. I want to say my boots, but I don't have them yet. They're my $350 boots. So I'm wanting to get them and try them. And then the other boots, they're supposed to come tomorrow. The Merrell boots, that's right. They shipped them, so, and they're expected tomorrow from Amazon. But I didn't know that these boots would be coming and that FedEx is delivering them. I didn't know that, and I didn't know that they wouldn't just leave them at the door, which is what everybody else does. So FedEx doesn't do that with any packages, I guess. I don't know. But whatever the reason, or maybe it's just because of the expense of the package, how expensive the package is. But anyway, that's the way it is. So yeah, I'm worried. I'm just a little worried. I need to be worried and make sure I'm here. Like I want to get the boots. If I don't get them, what's going to happen? You know, if I don't receive them, they return them to Amazon, then what happens? You know, that's not a good thing. But I'm so busy, I'm not even thinking about the boots, all the other things I order. I'm not thinking about the orders that are coming in. I was busy yesterday with the foot powder, and I forgot all about the packages, all the things that are soon going to be arriving. But I will need them, I'm sure. I'll need them if I want to have any kind of footwear, you know, that's good, solid work boot footwear, then I need these. So it's just that I've been doing without them for a long time. Like, I've done without them for a long time, so I'm not ready, you know, I'm not really ready. But the thing is, you know what? Yeah, the foot powder is going to make it possible to wear shoes instead of sandals too. That's the thing. That's a big thing. That's a huge thing. So let's talk about the foot powder. This is all natural stuff. Like, it's not these chemicals. So I've created a version 2 of my foot powder as well. Just today I did. And I'll explain why I did that. This morning, I tried my foot powder for the first time. And this is version 1. So I put it in the old bottle. But when I put it on my feet, I noticed it didn't have much of an aroma. You know, it didn't have much smell. The old one had a lot of tea tree oil, I guess, or all the different oils, you know, that give it that strong smell. So this didn't have as much smell. The other thing, so I realized, well, I just didn't put enough of the oil in it. But the other thing is, this is very much smoother than the powder I have. So one of the powders that was in the older one, the store-bought one, was coarsely ground. It wasn't as finely ground. So mine is much smoother to the touch, you know, which is good. That's a good thing. So I can rub it on my feet. There's no granularity. It's like silk. You know, it's very nice. But maybe you want it to be more grainy because you can then, you know, it helps to scrub and exfoliate too. So maybe it's not it may not be an advantage, but it's that's what it is. So, but I still think you actually can exfoliate with a very fine powder as well. It's not like it's a disadvantage necessarily, but anyway, that's what happened. So now the old one has slight aroma, but it went on my fingers and on my foot. When I put it on my foot, I don't smell it as much. So I decided, okay, I'm going to add more of the secondary ingredients that add the smells, you know, add the potency. So I took, you know, 3 tablespoons of the version 1, which is 2 tablespoons of, which is it, of the clay? I mean, it's the same. If I take 3 tablespoons of it, most of the version 1 is arrowroot powder and kale and clay, right? And it's 2 to 1. Twice as much arrowroot as clay, and the rest of it is smaller amounts of other ingredients that don't add much volume. So it's basically just 2 and 1. So that's why I took 3, because it would be basically the same as taking 2 tablespoons of arrowroot and 1 tablespoon of kale and clay. So 3 tablespoons I took. Then I said, okay, now I looked at what ingredients were here, because it was 21 tablespoons and 10 and a half tablespoons. You divide by 10 to get 2 and 1. So I was dividing everything by 10. So therefore, instead of half a teaspoon of aloe vera, it would have been 1/20 of a teaspoon is all I put in. So that's negligible, right? But anyway, so whatever it is. And it would have been 2 drops of tea tree oil instead of 20, because I'm dividing by 10 to get this combination. So I'm doing all this math, but in my mind, but I'm writing it down here. So I wrote down, what did I write down here? 3/8. Well, I wanted to increase. What happened was I wanted to increase the tea tree oil from 2 drops. You see, 2 tablespoons of arrowroot and 1 tablespoon of kaolin. Yes, I went back to my first edition, my first estimate, which was 1/4 teaspoon of kaolin and 1/2 teaspoon of arrowroot. And then in that one, I had 2 drops of tea tree oil. And even that, now that would have been extremely potent, I think, but maybe not, though. But if we multiply, you know, 1/4 teaspoon of kaolin to get 1 tablespoon of kaolin, it's a factor of 12, because there's 1/4 teaspoon is 1/12 of a tablespoon, because there's 3 teaspoons in a tablespoon. So 1/12 times 12 is 1. So I realized then that these 3 tablespoons I took out of version 1 and put in a bowl, they were basically 12 times the first estimate. But if I had 12 times the first estimate, I'd have to multiply the black hull powder and the aloe vera by 12 too, right, to get how much quantity. So I did that. I did that, I guess. What did I do here? Let's see. So I got 12. Yeah, so I ended up with, instead of 1/32 of black hull, when I multiply it by 12, I get 12/32. Divide by 8. Sorry, divide by 4. I get 3/8. See, 3/8. So I ended up with 3/8. I just did the math. I got 3/8 of a teaspoon of black hull powder and 3/16 of a teaspoon of aloe vera. That's a lot more than what was in the original version 1. So I just thought I'd just add that much, since it's a lot more. The other part I could just ignore, the part that was already in there, of those two. So of those two that were already in there, I just ignored what was already in there. And I just added the 3/8 teaspoon and the 3/16 teaspoon for those two. And then I was going to say, when I multiplied by 12 the number of drops of tea tree, it was going to be 24 drops of that and 24 drops of peppermint. But I thought, well, that's too much. It's got to be too much. But maybe it isn't. Because the thing is, the tea tree oil had to be more than the amount of the black hull powder. That's right. So I still think I'm probably, but I'm being cautious with the tea tree oil. But according to the label on the original bottle of the store-bought, there was more tea tree oil than there was aloe vera. Therefore, I'm not doing it consistent with the original recipe. I'm not in keeping with the original bottle label, but because it gives the order of ingredients by weight. As you go down the list, it's less weight for each of those. So less quantity of each ingredient by weight as you go down the list. So I know therefore that I'm not, I decided to divide this by half and say 12 drops of tea tree instead of 24, but that's not really right. It just seems to me that 24 was too many. But what then I ended up with this version 2, which is in, it's got its own label on the side. So I've got it labeled as version 2. I'm calling it FBR, or KBR, sorry, KBR, Kale and Black Rose, I'm calling it, version 2. But it's in the old odor eaters. But, you know, I had to pry the lid off to get it in. But then, now if I put this on my hand now, I can put some of this. This is a nice dispenser bottle. It's easy to control how much comes out. That's what I like about this bottle. So if I take some of that on my hand. Yeah, I can smell. The rose geranium is probably a little bit too prominent. And the peppermint might be too much peppermint too. So I can, what I can do, but I have to keep the amount of the peppermint very high also, because it was more, there was more peppermint than there was aloe vera. So unless I want to reduce, you know, I can reduce the aloe vera, and I can, but I can't now that I've already added it. I'd have to make a version 3 if I wanted to try this with less of these. The only way that I can be consistent with the original label is if I go back to, you know, 24 drops, adding 12 more of the peppermint and 12 more drops of the tea tree oil. But I won't add more geranium oil. The rose geranium smells a bit too strong as it is. It's stronger than we need, or than the original had. And it's, you know, unless you want your feet to smell like roses all the time, you know, it's too much. You don't need that. So, I mean, smells like rose geranium, which is a very beautiful smell, but it's not the right smell for a foot powder, I think. You could do it. Yeah, the other thing is, you know, you could do whatever you want. Like, I mean, you can make whatever combination you want. But you're not supposed to use any of the oils for making baby powder. Don't use any oils. Just use, you could just, even just the arrowroot and the kale and clay is what I think you can use for babies. But you have to make sure, if you're going to make your own, I believe that's acceptable, though. I'm pretty sure, but I haven't really researched it thoroughly. But for baby powder, that, other people add other types of things. For very young babies, you know, younger than some number of months, you should not use any essential oils. But at some point, you can use some milder oils, but you don't need peppermint oil. You'd never use peppermint oil on a body powder, and you'd never use tea tree oil, I don't think, either. This is just for feet. And you'd never use black hole powder, because that's for feet also. So I don't know about aloe vera. I would have to research it, but I think the clay and the arrowroot would be the two that would be okay to use on a body powder, for a body powder. But I don't even know enough to know if I would use it on my own baby if I had a baby. You know, I don't know enough. Certainly, if I were going to use it on my own baby, I'd want to know for sure how safe it was. Well, whatever you can do, though, you would do. You could anyway. No matter whatever you try and do, you'd, if it's your own baby, you would try a very small amount. But if you don't want to use talc, because talc has got some questions, talcum powder and talc are questionable because of the supposed, some people say, it has a cancer effect. It causes cancer. So talc can be avoided by using your own ingredients and making your own powder. That's the thing. Arrowroot and kaolin clay are the two that I'm thinking are the safest ingredients of all these ingredients. And you can make a nice powder that. Now then, if you want it to have an aroma for very young babies, you can't do that. But you can do it with, once they get old enough, maybe after 3 months or something, I'm you know, whatever it is. But every baby is going to be different. But when you decide, you might add some rose geranium oil, maybe, just a tiny bit, to give it a little bit of a scent, depending on what you think is right for your baby. Maybe you want that for, you know, or maybe you'd use a different oil, you know, depending on what the gender of the baby was, etc. You know, you might decide, but you wouldn't need tea tree, and you wouldn't need peppermint for a body powder, and you wouldn't need black hull powder. And I don't know why the aloe vera is there. So I've tried it today. It's fine. It works. It works today, but it doesn't have the potency of the foot powder that I was using, that was the store-bought version that came in this bottle. This is now my version is in the bottle here. And it has a fragrance, but I think it's definitely milder than the original. And the one that I just, version two this morning, it's got too much rose geranium, version two. So the only way to drown out the rose geranium is to add more tea tree oil, I think. But basically, yeah, the whole idea, the recipe I gave is basically 2-to-1 arrowroot powder and kaolin clay, and then you add as much tea tree oil and peppermint as you think you need, roughly equal of each of those, but the tea tree should be more than the peppermint, if anything. And then, you know, like I added 20 drops to my 30 tablespoons of combined powders, but I think probably more is needed, so 30-40 drops, doubling it. But that's even not enough, because I went 6 times more in this version too. The problem was, but I only added 2 drops of rose geranium, and it's still too much, even though I multiplied. And I already had 3 drops, so I didn't multiply it by 6 like I did the tea tree and the peppermint. And it's still too much rose geranium. So you have to be very careful with the rose geranium. That's the advice on that. I should have gone 1 drop, I guess, of the rose geranium, or maybe not added any of that. Because it just doesn't smell like the original foot powder. It's too rosy, geranium-y. That's it. So that's the topic. Oh, you know, I kind of wish I'd got my boots, but I don't know why. I feel like I don't know how they could have not woken me up. I'd just gone to bed. I don't feel. You know, I don't feel like. Confident about these boots arriving. Like, if they don't arrive, then they send it back. They hold it for 7 days, so that if they don't deliver it, I'd have to go and pick it up, or they'd send it back. But I don't want to have to go and pick it up. I want to be here. So tomorrow I'll be here. We'll see what happens tomorrow, I guess. Unless they do come today, they're not supposed to. So let's look at Psalm 6. But anyway, the foot powder. Yeah, the foot powder is great. Except it's mild. It's just a milder foot powder, and maybe it's fine though. You know, I can still use version one. Maybe version one will be fine, and I won't need version two. But I only made a small amount of version two. It's not anywhere. It's only like, you know, small 3 tablespoons in here. It's nowhere near full. This is nearly empty. But I was using, some years ago, I used this odor eaters. You need some kind of a dispenser bottle or a jar or something, you know, to keep the foot powder in, if you're making foot powder. But I highly recommend this kind of approach to foot powder. I think it's going to enable me to not have to, you know, I mean, it's going to reduce the socks getting dirty. The socks won't get dirty, you know, they won't get smelly as fast. Nothing will happen as fast as far as the feet getting dirty. And you rub the powder on the feet. That's right. You don't need to put the powder in your socks. You can just rub it on your feet, in between your toes and on your feet. Just rub a small amount of powder. Because it's all natural stuff. It's not going to be... You have to be careful the first few times because you don't know how your skin will react. But it's not going to be as, you know, unpleasant as putting some kind of chemical or trusting someone else. You're using your own ingredients, whatever you want to use. And you can make your recipe from whatever you want and try whatever you want for the, you know, you can use as much rose geranium as you want. I'm just saying, I don't like the rose geranium to be too strong in the mix. You can have it however strong you want. It's perfectly fine, but I was trying to reverse engineer the original recipe, and I came very close in this batch, just it didn't have as much of the tea tree in this one, and the peppermint. It didn't have as much of the powerful oils. That's the only real difference, I think. But if I increase those amounts, then I can increase the aloe vera and also the black hull powder, because they were less in quantity than the oils. But the kale and clay and the arrowroot, they were way above in the total weight. So the weight of the kale and clay and the arrowroot was going to be so high above these other ingredients that it doesn't matter. You know, we just want to, it doesn't matter how much it is as far as, there's no way to know except by the aroma, by the smell of the powder. That's the only way to know how much the lower grouping is. Like the oils and the aloe vera and black hull powders, those things are all, they're roughly the same in quantities in terms of mass for each one. The oils are slightly more in mass than the others, and that tells you how much of the others you can add. You can't add more than the mass of the weight of the oils, so because that's the ratios they were in. If you want to duplicate the recipe, you can do whatever you want. You can change it. That's the other thing. You're totally free to change the recipe. I'm just trying to make the original recipe first, and then I will later on possibly discover by accident or some other way a better recipe, maybe. But, you know, there's so many possible recipes. I thought the best way was to try to recreate the original, just to try and restrict. It's better to be restricted for the sake of discipline and learning initially, and then once you know more, then you can have more freedom, you know? It's better to have some restriction at the beginning, just from the point of view. And also, the other thing is you have to write everything down. Every time you add something, you got to write it in your book. You have to have a book. I recommend having a notebook, definitely, not scraps of paper. And it's advisable to write these things down. But I really strongly recommend you have to write them down immediately after you add the ingredient. You have to write it down. Or you write it down before you put it in. Write down what you're going to do and then do it. Because if you don't, it's easy to forget that you've added something, and it's easy to forget to write it down. So, and I've been doing this. I was an experimental physicist, so I had to write things down. And it's easy for me to forget. And I was an experimental, you know, a physicist who had to write things down when I did experiments and whatever. I mean, I knew I had to keep extremely accurate records, and still difficult. It's still difficult. So it's difficult for anybody, I believe, to keep records that are accurate. That's the hardest part of this whole thing, is keeping the records accurate. And then the calculations are not easy either. And I don't know whether I'm using American or Canadian, or Imperial, Canadian, which is imperial, you know, measuring spoons. I don't know what they are. I'm fairly sure they're probably, I'm pretty sure they're American because, but how would I know? How would anybody know that? It doesn't say. And the measuring cup, yeah. You know, I might have made, there's not a lot of difference between the two, probably. So it probably doesn't matter if you mix and match them, or if you mix one type with the other type, but it's something to be aware of. Okay, so all these things, it's definitely not easy to do it, even though it seems like it should be. It's a lot of fun to do it, but it's such hard work that it's more like work than it is fun. But the fun part is the aromatherapy. It's like, smell so good. It's aromatherapy just to smell your hands afterward. Oh, you know, this one's nothing, but I've got it on this hand. It's so good. It gives you aromatherapy, like listening to great music, like we were doing before, right, with Oscar Peterson. And we should I should be listening to him, I think, whenever I'm doing anything else, like that Night Train. It's called Night Train full album. But if you look up Night Train Oscar Peterson, you should find this. It's in brackets full album, and there's 11 songs. It's not the full album, but it says full album on the YouTube playlist. It's not the full album, but it's 11 songs from the album, and those 11 songs are quite amazing. I'm going to play them probably. In the background, maybe, here. Yeah, I love this. It's just so good. I want to hear some more Oscar Peterson, some different stuff too, different. But, and I've been finding a few other things. But the thing about him is, I didn't realize my own style of piano playing, the part of my piano playing that I like the most is the part that's similar to how he plays. I can't do a lot of the things he does, but the part that I can do, I didn't realize he did that. Almost exactly the same way that I do it, he does certain things. And that is the thing that amazes me. When I did my recordings, I had given up alcohol and all drugs and everything. I'd given that up for several years before I started making music. So all my music is drug and alcohol free, all of it, starting in 85 when I first moved here. But I gave up drugs and alcohol. I mean, I didn't drink at all. I hadn't officially given up alcohol, but I wasn't drinking at all. So I might as well have given up, but I didn't officially give up alcohol. But I'd given up drugs in 1980 completely, entirely, totally. So, four years before I moved here, and then that's 8 years before I started making recordings, or 7 years before I made it, started, actually 5 years before I started the four track recordings, 7 years before I started the 16 track recordings, I'd given up all drugs. So it was all done au naturel, in the natural state of the mind, you know, that's how I did it. But, and I couldn't play guitar, but I learned how to play guitar in a way that I can't duplicate now. But just by repetition, I would just learn one song and I'd just practice it over and over. So that doesn't mean I can play that song. It just means I could play it again if I practiced hard enough. But I was only looking for one take. And it wouldn't be the first take back in those days. I wasn't interested in the first take. On piano, I could do things first take. That was because I played the piano from the age of 12 years old. I could do a lot of things first take on the piano, but a lot of it on the piano wasn't first take either. But I could do and did do a lot of things first take on the piano. Okay, so let's come back to the Psalms chapter 6. We ask Jehovah, Father, help us to be humble, help us to be remaining in your love, and help us to be attentive and to have help us to have peace when we do study your word. And help us to share what we learn with others in a way that would help them and not be causing them any trouble. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so to the director on stringed instruments on the lower octave, a melody of David. Let's turn this down. Right. But let's turn it off, actually. Okay. To the director on stringed instruments on the lower octave, a melody of David. Psalm 6. O Jehovah, do not in your anger reprove me, and do not in your rage correct me. Show me favor, O Jehovah, for I am fading away. Heal me, O Jehovah, for my bones have been disturbed. Yes, my own soul has been very much disturbed. And you, O Jehovah, how long? Do return, O Jehovah, do rescue my soul. Save me for the sake of your loving kindness. For in death there is no mention of you. In Sheol, who will laud you? I have grown weary with my sighing. All night long I make my couch swim. With my tears I make my own divan overflow. From vexation my eye has become weak. It has grown old because of all those showing hostility to me. Get away from me, all you practicers of what is hurtful. For Jehovah will certainly hear the sound of my weeping. Jehovah will indeed hear my request for favor. Jehovah himself will accept my own prayer. All my enemies will be very much ashamed and disturbed. They will turn back. They will be ashamed instantly. Look at that. That inspires faith to my mind very much, where it says, all my enemies will turn back. They will all turn back. So, in other words, if we're undergoing a situation right now, you know, if we have any problem with our enemies or bullies or whoever our enemies are, we don't have to think that should be an ongoing worry, because or that we're going to have to worry about it in the future, because it says, all my enemies will turn back. Verse 10. And there's a part of the prayer in verse 8 is David prays that the practicers of what is hurtful would get away from him. But he's been crying, he says. He's weeping in verse 8 and also in verse 6. He's making his couch or his bed, wherever he's sleeping, apparently. All night long, he's making it wet with his tears, verse 6. And in the grave, in Sheol, who will laud Jehovah in the grave? Who's going to praise him in the grave? So David is praying for Jehovah to save him, to rescue him now while David's still alive, because he knows he's not going to be praising Jehovah in the grave. Now keep in mind, this is a song. It's a song. All of the Psalms are songs that were sung. So they're more you know, dramatic, and they say things in a way that's more suitable for the medium of singing, you know, that's and for words that would be in a song. That's why the wording is used the way it is. That's something to keep in mind. And also David prays that he not be corrected by Jehovah. He prays that Jehovah will not be angry in verse 1 and correct him in Jehovah's anger, so that David would be able to hopefully escape from Jehovah's anger. That's something he prayed for. as well. So we did Isaiah 15 yesterday. We should have done 5. So is 5 long? I think 5 is pretty long. 5 is long, so we can't do that today. We're gonna put that off, I think. And let's look at 6 of Isaiah. That's much shorter. I just feel like Jehovah's guiding us. He somehow directed me to not do 5 yesterday. But we can't leave out verse 5. So maybe when we get to 15, we'll be doing 5 instead. But verse 6 of Isaiah, here we are. Let's do verse 6 of Isaiah, shall we, little children, now? In the year that King Uzziah died, I, however, got to see Jehovah sitting on a throne lofty and lifted up, and his skirts were filling the temple. Seraphs were standing above him. Each one had 6 wings. With 2 he kept his face covered, and with 2 he kept his feet covered, and with 2 he would fly about. And this one called to that one and said, holy, holy, holy is Jehovah of armies. The fullness of all the earth is his glory. And the pivots of the thresholds began to quiver at the voice of the one calling, and the house itself gradually filled with smoke. And I proceeded to say, woe to me, for I am as good as brought to silence, because a man unclean in lips I am, and in among a people unclean in lips I am dwelling. For my eyes have seen the King, Jehovah of armies himself. At that, one of the seraphs flew to me, and in his hand there was a glowing coal that he had taken with tongs off the altar. And he proceeded to touch my mouth and to say, look, this has touched your lips, and your error has departed, and your sin itself is atoned for. And I began to hear the voice of Jehovah saying, whom shall I send, and who will go for us? And I proceeded to say, here I am, send me. And he went on to say, go, and you must say to this people, hear again and again, O men, but do not understand, and see again and again, but do not get any knowledge. Make the heart of this people unreceptive, and make their very ears unresponsive, and paste their very eyes together, that they may not see with their eyes, and with their ears they may not hear, and that their own heart may not understand, and that they may not actually turn back and get healing for themselves. At this I said, how long, O Jehovah? Then he said, until the cities actually crash in ruins, to be without an inhabitant, and the houses be without earthling man, and the ground itself is ruined into a desolation, and Jehovah actually removes earthling men far away, and the deserted condition does become very extensive in the midst of the land. And there will still be in it a tenth, and it must again become something for burning down, like a big tree, and like a massive tree, in which, when there is a cutting down of them, there is a stump. A holy seed will be the stump of it. Isaiah chapter 6. It's interesting because we know there's the illustration of the tree in the book of Daniel as well, which talks about 7 times would pass over it. And that was the times of the Gentiles that were talked about there in the book of Daniel. At least that's how it's been discussed by many commentators already. So I'm trying to remember now. We're not studying the book of Daniel right this moment. In the interest of simplicity, we're just looking at one book at a time. You know, we're trying to take it one step at a time. We're not trying to get too far ahead of everything. And we're not trying to say that it's already figured out. We want to learn it with an open mind and heart. Where is the times of the Gentiles in the Bible? I'm trying to think. I think it is mentioned in the book of Daniel. Okay. see if it mentions it. Wow, Oxford Bible Church mentions seven times being 2,520 years as well. That's interesting. So, the Gentile times. Okay. Yeah, well, let me see. Maybe I can look it up. I'll look it up. I'll try and look it up here. In my other copy of this same translation that we're reading from, if I look up Gentile. Oh. Okay, let's see. Nations, maybe. Maybe it's called Nations. In the book of Daniel. I'm trying to find Daniel here. Where is it? Where is it? Okay, it's after Proverbs. There it is. Yeah. Daniel chapter 4. And it's combined with the book of Revelation. The understanding about the Gentile times is taken from the book of Daniel, but also from the book of Revelation. So it's using more than just the book of Daniel. But we don't need to be concerned about that in today's study, because we're not studying that particularly. I mean, every time we mention a tree, we don't have to talk about the times of the Gentiles necessarily. This was a tree in the book of Isaiah chapter 6. But it's just good to realize that this mention here of a tree might be related, and we might be able to correlate it with the other example of the tree that was cut down. And you know, these other scriptures might be able to be connected with it in such a way as to help us understand a holy seed will be the stump of it. That's the other thing. That's the idea of like the remnant of Israel. It wouldn't be completely wiped out. There would be a remnant, right? Like Joseph was a remnant in Egypt. He was placed in Egypt as a remnant in advance, so that Israel, when they came there, he would be able to assist them during the famine. So there was that example of the remnant too. But the remnant idea is an idea that's also portrayed in the stump here, the holy seed, it says in verse 13, Isaiah 6 and 13. So that's something, it has significance with regard to the remnant also. It's a fascinating The remnant is a very important idea, because it says that there's still hope even when the nation is wiped out. The nation of Israel was taken away to Babylon, you know, was wiped out essentially, but there was still a remnant. There were some faithful believers that remained, and that's the remnant. And they did return to their homeland and to Jerusalem, and they did rebuild the temple, and the Messiah did come in the days of Tiberius Caesar, in the way that we've already discussed. And I mean, we need to identify what year it happened, like, because if we don't identify what year it happened, then it's not real history. We need that's the importance of getting the dates. That's why I worked so hard to get the dates and to show that Jesus was baptized in the year that was identified as 26 of the Common Era. And then in John 2 and 20, the Jews talked to him at the Passover in 27 of the Common Era, which is just the next year. But of course, they did not have New Year's on December 31st like we have. For them, that was not... That's the Common Era, and the dates that we use were not something they used. But the thing is, when we do it this way, we can see how there is... Well, we need to understand it. And it was an interesting point. We see how, when we do it this way, how all the prophecies can be accounted for. And the statements about what year of Tiberius was the year in which John came baptizing, that was the year counting from the co-rulership of Tiberius, not his sole rule, is another way. There's two ways that could be done. And if you use the other way, you get a different year for the baptismal year of Jesus. But, yeah, I explained all this in the Born and Raised article, and which is online, and it's not charged for or anything. There's no charge to read it. It's just a free article. Everything on my website is no charge, including that article. It's on willofjehovah.com for anyone just joining us. And the other thing, all my daily videos are at the top in the blue box with the italic JW inside the box. That's where I keep my videos right now. That's the link to all the place where I'm keeping all my daily videos, which I'm making every day. But before that, I didn't used to make them every day, but there's still all the other audios as well, and videos that were made prior are there. You can find them there too. The ones that are not on YouTube, I've got a channel called Ward Green on YouTube, and I have one called Outward Films on YouTube also. But I'm not monetized on YouTube. It's just a very there's no commenting on my channels. I'm not operating with the intent of getting subscribers or anything like that. So at some point I made a YouTube video that was extremely long, and YouTube told me, or Google sent me a message, maybe it was automated, I don't know. But I was not going to be allowed to make videos longer than 15 minutes without getting, you know, clearance or something. So at that point, I decided to switch over to my own website to make my videos. And that's facilitated my making videos much more often, because I don't have to wait for YouTube processing, and I don't have to, you know, it's just, I do all my videos recently. I've been doing them all without any editing. I just do them live. And I talk about all the things that I want to talk about in the live forum. Okay, so we've read Isaiah. We were doing John. We were doing John. That's right. So we're on John 6. This is a long one. Wow. Oh, this is a really long one. Okay, so I think we have enough time to do it. Yeah, we do. But it is long, so we better get going, starting on that one. Yeah, I'm disappointed about my boots. I just don't understand what happened to my boots. I missed. You never know. I normally hear the smallest knock on my door. I'll hear it. So that's why I'm a little disappointed. Anyway. Tomorrow I'll have to be awake but there's no guarantee that I'll be able to get it, even if I'm awake all day long. Stranger things have happened. That's what I would say. Stranger things have happened than that, you know. Sometimes there can be somebody who doesn't want you to get a package. You know, it's possible, but you know, you don't ever even want to think about that possibility. But it's a reality. Sometimes there can be people who are trying to prevent things from happening. But you would think that those people would be putting their job at risk too if they were doing that. So it's not something that is very good to think about. So John chapter 6, let's think about good things. Let's just assume, always try and assume the best things about people. Try to assume the best things. John, I mean, it's not always easy because we have ideas being planted in our heads by people who are not always perfect. You know, nobody's perfect. And so but it's our own inner makeup is sinful. We have sin inside us. We were born sinful. We inherited sin from Adam. So here it says, John chapter 6, after these things, Jesus departed across the Sea of Galilee, or Tiberias. But a great crowd kept following him because they were beholding the signs he was performing upon those who were ill. So Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he was sitting with his disciples. Now the Passover, the festival of the Jews, was near. When therefore Jesus raised his eyes and observed that a great crowd was coming to him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy loaves for these to eat?" However, he was saying this to test him, for he himself knew what he was about to do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of loaves is not enough for them, so that each one may get a little." One of his disciples, Andrew, the brother of Simon Peter, said to him, "Here is a little boy that has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes. But what are these among so many?" Jesus said, "Have the men recline as at meal." Now there was a lot of grass in the place. Therefore the men reclined. About 5,000 in number. So Jesus took the loaves, and after giving thanks, he distributed them to those reclining, likewise also as much of the small fishes as they wanted. But when they had their fill, he said to his disciples, "Gather together the fragments that remain over, so that nothing is wasted." Therefore they gathered them together, and they filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves, which were left over by those who had eaten. Hence, when the men saw the signs he performed, they began to say, "This is for a certainty the prophet that was to come into the world." Therefore Jesus, knowing they were about to come and seize him to make him king, withdrew again into the mountain all alone. When evening fell, his disciples went down to the sea, and boarding a boat, they set out across the sea for Capernaum. Well, by now it had grown dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. Also, the sea began to be stirred up because a strong wind was blowing. However, when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they beheld Jesus walking upon the sea and getting near the boat, and they became fearful. But he said to them, "It is I, have no fear." Therefore they were willing to take him into the boat, and directly the boat was at the land to which they were trying to go. The next day the crowd that was standing on the other side of the sea saw that there was no boat there, except a little one, and that Jesus had not entered into the boat with his disciples, but that only his disciples had left. But boats from Tiberias arrived near the place where they ate the bread after the Lord had given thanks. Therefore, when the crowd saw that neither Jesus was there, nor his disciples, they boarded their little boats and came to Capernaum to look for Jesus. So when they found him across the sea, they said to him, "Rabbi, when did you get here?" Jesus answered them and said, "Most truly, I say to you, you are looking for me not because you saw signs, but because you ate from the loaves and were satisfied. Work not for the food that perishes, but for the food that remains for life everlasting, which the Son of Man will give you. For upon this one the Father, even God, has put his seal of approval." Therefore they said to him, "What shall we do to work the works of God?" In answer, Jesus said to them, "This is the work of God, that you exercise faith in him whom that one sent forth." Therefore they said to him, "What then are you performing as a sign in order for us to see it and believe you? What work are you doing? Our forefathers ate the manna in the wilderness. Just as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." Hence Jesus said to them, "Most truly I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but my Father does give you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the one who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." Therefore they said to him, "Lord, always give us this bread." Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. He that comes to me will not get hungry at all, and he that exercises faith in me will never get thirsty at all. But I have said to you, you have even seen me, and yet do not believe. Everything the Father gives me will come to me, and the one that comes to me, I will by no means drive away, because I have come down from heaven to do not my will, but the will of him that sent me. This is the will of him that sent me, that I should lose nothing out of all that he has given me, but that I should resurrect it at the last day. For this is the will of my Father, that everyone that beholds the Son and exercises faith in him should have everlasting life, and I will resurrect him at the last day." Therefore the Jews began to murmur at him because he said, "I am the bread that came down from heaven." And they began saying, "Is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How is it that now he says, 'I have come down from heaven'?" In answer, Jesus said to them, "Stop murmuring among yourselves. No man can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will resurrect him in the last day. It is written in the prophets, 'And they will all be taught by Jehovah.' Everyone that has heard from the Father and has learned comes to me. Not that any man has seen the Father except he who is from God. This one has seen the Father. Most truly I say to you, he that believes has everlasting life. I am the bread of life. Your forefathers ate the manna in the wilderness and yet died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that anyone may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And for a fact, the bread that I shall give is my flesh in behalf of the life of the world." Therefore the Jews began contending with one another, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" Accordingly, Jesus said to them, "Most truly I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in yourselves. He that feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood has everlasting life, and I shall resurrect him at the last day. For my flesh is true food, and my blood is true drink. He that feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood remains in union with me, and I in union with him. Just as the living Father sent me forth, and I live because of the Father, he also that feeds on me even that one will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. It is not as when your forefathers ate and yet died. He that feeds on this bread will live forever. These things he said as he was teaching in public assembly at Capernaum. Therefore, many of his disciples, when they heard this, said, "This speech is shocking. Who can listen to it?" But Jesus, knowing in himself that his disciples were murmuring about this, said to them, "Does this stumble you? What therefore, if you should behold the Son of Man ascending to where he was before? It is the Spirit that is life-giving. The flesh is of no use at all. The sayings that I have spoken to you are spirit and are life, but there are some of you that do not believe." For from the beginning, Jesus knew who were the ones not believing and who was the one that would betray him. So he went on to say, "This is why I have said to you, no one can come to me unless it is granted him by the Father." Owing to this, many of his disciples went off to the things behind and would no longer walk with him. Therefore, Jesus said to the 12, "You do not want to go also, do you?" Simon Peter answered him, "Lord, whom shall we go away to? You have sayings of everlasting life. And we have believed and come to know that you are the Holy One of God." Jesus answered them, "I chose you 12, did I not? Yet one of you is a slanderer." He was in fact speaking of Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, for this one was going to betray him, although one of the 12. So this is a once in eternity occurrence, the presence of the Messiah on earth. It doesn't happen twice. It's a one of a kind event where Jesus says, Jesus has followers, and some of them die a death that is, all of them they live sacrificial lives, and some of them die a death that is also similarly sacrificial in some way, as we saw in the days of Jesus, there were disciples that were killed for their faith, or in the days after Jesus particularly. It was after Jesus was impaled in the crucifixion that after he was crucified that his disciples, some of them, suffered these similar deaths of, they died for their faith. We know that because we see even in Acts chapter 12, Herod did away with James, the brother of John, by the sword. And he arrested Peter. Right? So, anyway, there were things that even today there's the possibility that a Christian does die a terrible death, as we saw in Purple Triangles under Hitler. And it's possible that can happen. But this event of Jesus coming to the earth and saying, he who eats my flesh and drinks my blood, that doesn't happen with anyone else. There's no one else who says that. That doesn't keep happening over and over. That was once for all time, that occurrence. That Jesus coming to the earth and saying that was once for all time. It was not something that, Jesus' disciples don't say that. Even if they're the anointed followers who hope to live in and be part of the heavenly government, who rule with Christ as kings, with the 144,000 that are described in Revelation, even those followers do not have the same attributes that the Messiah had. They don't have this quality that they can't say this, you know, that he who eats my flesh and drinks my blood, you know, they don't say that. They can't say that because it was true of Jesus only. And it was spiritual. It was a spiritual statement. It was a figurative statement. He wasn't saying literally eat his flesh and drink his blood literally. No, he's not talking about the flesh. He's talking about the spirit. As he himself explained there, it was a figurative thing. But it shocked people. It shocked some of his disciples, and some of them left him. Because that itself shocked them, they left him. His speech was so you know, unappealing to them. It was so shocking to them. But he was talking about spiritual things. He wasn't talking about literal flesh. And he was using an expression that would be strong enough so that they could, his true disciples could understand the importance of it. And the you know, the way in which faith in Jesus had to be exercised, which was very, very intense faith, right? Similar to feeding on flesh and drinking blood, which is very extreme, this faith would have to be intense. But we don't feed on flesh and we don't drink blood. We don't use blood at all. So Jesus is making an illustration here. He knew that blood was forbidden in the law. He wasn't saying that people should drink blood. He wasn't saying they should use blood. He wasn't saying they should eat human flesh at all. He wasn't saying that. That's not what he was saying. It was an expression about a spiritual thing. It was something about spirituality and about everlasting life. The spirit that is life-giving. Verse 63. The flesh is of no use at all. He's very clear about that. It's the sayings that he's spoken, he said, that were spirit, or that our spirit and our life. His sayings never really passed away. We still read them today because they were preserved for a reason for us to use them. Yeah, so I guess we can end the study. I am very hopeful that the foot powder is going to be successful, even if it's not as aromatic as the, you know, it doesn't, I mean, I think there are going to be different levels. I think the foot powder will have a mild version, and it'll have a stronger version, and maybe the strongest. You're going to have several versions. So this is version one, and then I've made version two, and I'll make version three probably. And I'll compare how they work maybe as well over time. So, but I think even the mildest version, I have a feeling even the mildest version is going to have enormous success. That's what I think. I think version one will be, I really believe it's going to be effective, even though it doesn't have as much of the strong aroma, you know, and the tea tree oil is much less and so on. But it still has the black hull powder and the tea tree oil, and it has, it's all, they're antifungicidal. I mean, that will help immensely, and the peppermint oil too. That's all of those three things will greatly reduce the possibility of getting athlete's foot, and also, you know, it'll reduce the sweat. It will keep the feet dry. That's eliminated the problem already, probably. So, I think it's going to work really, really well. But, you know, I mean, time will tell. You know, the truth is in, what do they say? The proof is in the pudding. Yeah, proof is in the pudding. But that's what we say in English, right? That's an English saying. Proof is in the pudding. But it's not really true in this case, but maybe it is, because what we don't want is pudding. We want dry feet. We don't want anything that's wet. So we want to make sure it's not anything like pudding. But we want it to be dry, and that's the thing. Every day you can rub this stuff between your toes, and that cleans the feet. That removes whatever is in between your toes. It just removes it. At the same time, you're drying the foot. It's like preparing it with more of this dry powder. But you don't need a lot of it. It's just a very small amount of powder. It's just a tiny bit. Like, it's the smallest amount, like a pinch of powder. That's all you need almost for one foot. maybe 2 pinches to go in between. You need enough to get in between all of your toes, but you only need the smallest amount to rub in between your toes. You just need to get it on your finger and then rub the finger between the toes. It's very simple, and it's just to dry the skin and keep it, remove any surface layer on the skin of any dirt that got on there during the day. You start the next day. You may not even have to change your socks every day because they're not going to be any, they won't be anything like as dirty as they would be if you didn't use any foot powder. So I make my own toothpaste as well. Now I've got my foot powder. My toothpaste has been so far extremely effective. These are just recipes. In both cases, it wasn't my idea. I just got recipes on the internet, and I just decide whether the recipe that I find is a good recipe on the internet, whether I like it. I just see the recipe on the internet, and I say, I like it or I don't like it. I don't like certain things. I didn't like zinc oxide, so I didn't use that. I just, Jehovah tells me, well, based on what my inner instinctive responses or my feelings, you know, whatever in my mind and heart, whatever, if I don't like something, I can be persuaded maybe later on that it's a good idea to use some other ingredient that I'm not using now, but the persuasion will not come from someone else, you know, convincing me. I mean, we have to get it. I mean, it has to be from Jehovah, so that there can't be someone telling us, you have to do this. It has to be where the message is sent to us in a way that we decide it's from Jehovah, because it strikes us in such a way that we say, that's the truth. You know, that comes to me and strikes me as true. So we have to hear it, but it has to be in harmony with all of our knowledge about human health. Everything, I mean, for me, I have to know that everything about it is healthy and nothing about it is unhealthy. That's when I will try, and even then it's just trial. We still have to try it to find out if it works. That's just to get to the trial stage. It has to be perfect to get to the trial stage. I don't know why this struck me as perfect, but this when I just bought this. I've already tried it. I bought this stuff. It came in this jar, this bottle. I tried it. I liked it. So I tried to I successfully reverse engineered it, except for I haven't gotten the right proportions exactly yet. But I mean, I shouldn't say it's completely successful. I feel like it's successful. That's what I mean. But it's hard to know. The thing is, the tea tree and the black holes in the aloe vera are all at a certain level, but we don't know how far below in quantity they are compared to the kale and clay and the arrowroot, which are the main ingredients. The arrowroot and the kale and clay are by far the most abundant ingredient. The other things are much lower in quantity. So we don't know how far above in quantity the arrowroot and the kale and clay is, and we don't know how different they are from each other either. We just know the kale and clay is there's more weight from the kale and clay than there is arrowroot. We don't know if the arrowroot's down here or up here. We just know that the arrowroot is less in weight than the kale and clay. So we don't know that, and we also don't know how high these two are above the tea tree and the aloe vera and the black holes and all the other oils. We don't know. We know the rose geranium is the lowest quantity in weight of any of them, but that's all. We don't know how low it is. It could be really low in weight. That's why I'm making powder that's too aromatic, because it has too much of the rose geranium in it. But it's got to be very low, apparently. But, I mean, the reverse engineering process might take a few generations of iteration, you know, before I can say this is the right. I don't think it's going to matter. I honestly don't think it's going to matter what the exact proportions are. And there's going to be different people who will prefer a different proportion for their particular DNA or their skin, right? And babies should not be given this, you know, any of this stuff, or, you know, it's too dangerous for babies. Just stick with something simple, like, first of all, you have to do your own research too, but You have to stick with something. I'm thinking right now, white clay, which is kaolin clay, mixed with arrowroot. That's safe for babies, probably. That's what I think. And then you don't want to add anything more. Maybe aloe vera is safe for babies, but I'd have to research that. I don't know. I have a feeling it might be, but it's... I wouldn't risk it, right? You just try and keep it simple. You're just trying to keep the skin dry, so just go with... Even just the kaolin clay is a powder. It's going to probably absorb water. That's the simplest thing, and that's... It's made from ground-up rocks. It's clay. It's probably not going to hurt the skin of an infant. Arrowroot powder is something organic. You know, it's something that comes from a plant. I think it's pretty safe because it's not a very strong smelling thing, right? But we don't, if you want to be safe, I guess you don't even go as far as that. It's normally used because it's, I think arrowroot is better at absorbing moisture. That's why they use it. That's why they use it. I think that's true. So if you can find out that arrowroot is safe enough for babies, then you can use it. You don't even have to use the clay. Why do we use the clay, though? I'm trying to think. Why do we need the clay if we can just use arrowroot? See, arrowroot is like a substitute for cornstarch. I don't like cornstarch. And I don't even know why I don't like that. I just don't like cornstarch. It's strange. See, there's no reason that I can give for why I don't like cornstarch. Some people use cornstarch for this, too. And that may be perfectly acceptable to some people. I don't know why I don't like it, but I don't like it for some reason. Maybe I'll figure that out or remember why. But this is Ward Green. It's October 26, 2022, 17:38 hours. I'm thinking about my boots. I'm worried about my boots. But I shouldn't worry. I guess it's not going to do me any good to worry. Just thanks a lot for watching. I mean, thank you to everyone who's listening and watching. And I really pray that all of these scriptures that we're reading are going to be helpful to everybody who is interested. And I love you. Bye for now.